Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, February 16, 2012. Six Palestinians, mostly children, killed in a bus-truck collision in Ramallah. Meanwhile, six were wounded in two Israeli airstrikes in the Gaza Strip. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. At least six Palestinians, five of them were children, died and 39 others were wounded when a bus collided with a truck near the West Bank city of Ramallah Thursday morning, according to a Palestinian official source. Apparently, the bus was carrying students going to school when it was hit with a truck that's...
Coming up next, Informativo Pacifica.
A continuación, Informativo Pacifica.
No te la pierdas.
Because we are the 99%.
Un incendio en una prisión de Honduras quita la vida a centenares de personas. Reportan un índice alarmante de víctimas de tráfico de humanos en Estados Unidos. México sobresale por la discriminación contra los pueblos indígenas. Y un juez norteamericano pide la legalización de drogas ilegales. A continuación, detalles de estas y otras noticias en esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Te saluda Fernando Velázquez. Quédate con nosotros. El Departamento de Seguridad Interna norteamericano advierte que el déficit de trabajadores en el campo está llegando a proporciones de crisis, por lo que consideró necesario que el Congreso apruebe una reforma migratoria. La titular del poderoso departamento, Janet Napolitano, asegura que los rancheros y granjeros no pueden encontrar quien haga el trabajo del campo, pues los jornaleros rurales se están regresando a México por falta de trabajo. Napolitano señaló que el número de visas para trabajadores temporales es muy bajo y se requiere una acción legislativa para remediar la falta de empleados en el campo. En Honduras, un incendio en una cárcel de Camayagua causó la muerte de por lo menos 350 presos, muchos de los cuales quedaron atrapados en sus celdas y fueron envueltos por las llamas mientras pedían ayuda a gritos. Las autoridades dicen estar dispuestas a iniciar una investigación del siniestro. El periodista Dasaif Aguilar nos habla del trágico suceso.
El incendio inició aproximadamente a las 12 de la noche, hora local. Se llamaron primero a los bomberos. Los primeros que respondieron el hecho fueron los bomberos. Los bomberos trataron de apaciguar el fuego, lo lograron. Luego de eso le entregaron la situación a la policía y a los militares.
Aguilar habla de los sobrevivientes que, si bien quedaron malheridos con fracturas y quemaduras, lograron salvar la vida. Algunos de ellos escondiéndose en los baños y abriendo el agua en la regadera.
En un espacio físico de unos 300 metros, 400 metros, se trató de ubicar a los sobrevivientes, a pesar que tuvieran quemaduras, a pesar que muchos de ellos tienen fracturas en sus brazos y pies, porque se lanzaron de muros para poder sobrevivir. Solo pudimos conocer un testimonio de uno de los sobrevivientes que dijo que nos resguardamos en uno de los baños para poder salvar nuestra vida, e encendimos las pocas pistas que funcionaban para que el fuego se disipara, para que el humo no nos asfixiara.
Cintia Ayala es miembro del Partido Libre y de la organización Abogados en Resistencia en el centroamericano país de Honduras.
A los medios de comunicación golpistas, los medios de comunicación de lo que están planteando es que se trató de un cortocircuito y bueno, que se irán a hacer algunas investigaciones cuando ya sabemos nosotros que es una situación que se ha repetido en otros dos centros penales de aquí del país, sin que hasta la fecha pues se hayan deducido responsabilidades a las personas que las tenían. En ese momento, los medios de comunicación alternativos, no oficialistas, han estado dando testimonios bastante crudos de la situación que se vivió, en el sentido, en primer lugar, de que al momento de iniciarse el fuego y los reclusos comenzaron a pedir auxilio, pues los custodios, en vez de abrirles los portones de las celdas, lo que hicieron fue comenzar a hacer disparos para que ellos se retiraran de la puerta. Esta situación fue la que provocó una tragedia de las dimensiones que ya se están conociendo, porque oficialmente son 359 víctimas, pero se especula que podría subir en las próximas horas a 402 fallecidos. Esta situación también se ha dado a conocer la tardanza que hubo por parte del Cuerpo de Bomberos, que queda la estación a escasas 4 cuadras de la granja penal, que no llegó oportunamente, que carecía de los insumos necesarios, y también se estaba lamentando el hecho de que estando la base militar de Palmerola a escasa distancia del lugar de la tragedia, y tratándose de una tragedia de esas dimensiones, a pesar de que ellos cuentan con todo el equipo para hacer frente a un incendio de esas proporciones, pues no acudieron a dar apoyo a las personas que estaban en ese momento exponiendo su vida, y también esta situación podría ser la que hizo que se elevaran a cifras tan altas el número de fallecidos. Perdón. Otra situación que se está analizando en este momento es el tema de que los incendios que se han dado en las granjas penales en nuestro país han ocurrido en horas de la noche, cuando todos los internos pues están confinados en sus celdas, y que los cortocircuitos, que es a lo que se atribuyen los siniestros, son situaciones perfectamente prevenibles, porque las autoridades del penal tienen la responsabilidad de velar porque las conexiones eléctricas que hacen los internos respeten las normas de seguridad. Pero como existe un gran hacinamiento, estamos hablando de una granja penal diseñada para 500 personas que albergaba en este momento más de 900. Entonces, en esas condiciones, pues existe una responsabilidad directa de los directores de no solo de ese centro penal, sino que el director nacional de centros penales, de la Secretaría de Seguridad y por ende del Estado de Honduras, por el fallecimiento de todos estos compatriotas.
María Luisa Borjas es comisionada de policía en retiro en Honduras.
Las medidas las están tomando demasiado tarde. Aquí esperan que mueran más de 300 personas para tomar medidas. En el Congreso tenían una ley, un proyecto de ley carcelario dormido como por 2 años en una gaveta sin hacer nada para implementarla. Y hasta ahora que sucede esta tragedia que no tiene realmente comparación. ¿Cómo es posible que seres humanos se quemen, pero peor que animales, encerrados? Las imágenes son dantescas de estos hombres abrazados a los barrotes y quemándose poco a poco. Es horrible, es la muerte más horrible que una persona puede tener, y esa es responsabilidad exclusiva del Estado. Esto lo están tratando como que si fuera un accidente o un incidente, cuando este es un acto criminal. Aquí deben de deducir responsabilidades desde las más altas autoridades ahí en los centros penales. ¿Pero qué pasó? Suspendieron al director de centros penales y a otras autoridades, pero dejan encargado al segundo en mando, que es de la misma línea. O sea, es lo mismo, como que si dejaran a la misma persona encargada. Ahí toda la gente debió haber sido removida, toda, de manera que no puedan manipular evidencias, de manera que no puedan amenazar testigos. Hacen las cosas para tratar de engañar a las personas que no conocen el sistema, ¿verdad? Pero realmente no hay voluntad política para, en primer lugar, para deducir responsabilidades, y en segundo lugar, para mejorar la situación de los centros penales en nuestro país.
Ayala señala que algunas de las víctimas eran prisioneros que ya habían cumplido su sentencia y otros estaban allí porque el gobierno los había identificado como opositores al golpe de Estado que removió al presidente Manuel Zelaya.
Lo que había y que se está haciendo por parte de algunas organizaciones defensoras de derechos humanos y algunos compañeros de Libre y de Abogados en Resistencia es unos análisis porque según se ha determinado una gran cantidad de los internos que fallecieron eran compatriotas que todavía no habían sido condenados y otra cosa más lamentable, varios de los internos que fallecieron eran compatriotas que ya habían cumplido sus condenas y que por negligencia del sistema de justicia, de impartición de justicia de nuestro país todavía permanecían encarcelados a pesar de que ya habían pagado la deuda con la sociedad. Entonces todas estas situaciones agravan la responsabilidad que tiene el Estado y obviamente los niveles de impunidad y de persecución que hay han hecho que algunas de las personas que están detenidas en los diversos centros penales de nuestro país pues sean personas a las que se les ha acusado de algún otro tipo de delitos, pero que en realidad son personas vinculadas con lo que ha sido el movimiento de resistencia. Entonces hasta este momento debemos de terminar de revisar los listados de las personas fallecidas, de las personas que están en este momento en situación bastante grave de salud en los centros asistenciales para poder determinar si teníamos compañeros vinculados políticamente que pudieran haber estado guardando prisión ahí en la granja penal.
Borja, quien tiene un amplio conocimiento de la situación, ya que observó de cerca el actuar de la policía y guardias carcelarios, apunta a un alarmante nivel de corrupción dentro de las penales.
Los centros penales han sido utilizados como fuente de ingreso. En un centro penal cobran por permitir introducir un radio, por permitir introducir una estufa, cobran por el uso de una cama y dependiendo si la cama es la número 5 hacia arriba o la número 1 hacia abajo, es la cantidad que se paga. O sea, y eso es del conocimiento público, pues cobran por permitir visitas conyugales, cobran por permitir la salida de los reos los fines de semana, incluso reos que la ley todavía no les permite esa salida, ¿verdad? Y sin embargo salen mediante una paga. O sea, los centros penales han sido, como le digo, una fuente de ingreso y uno de los centros de corrupción más grandes de nuestro país. En primer lugar, la Secretaría de Seguridad no debió en ningún momento haber manejado los centros penales. Para esto se necesita personal con una formación especial, con estudios especiales de guarda y custodia en centros penales, de gendarmería. Eso se necesita, pero aquí la policía también ha estado manejando los centros penales, con esto creando un poder absoluto, porque mire usted, la policía es la que investiga, es la que detiene, es la que remite a las autoridades competentes y es la que espera a los detenidos, a los reos en los centros penales. Hay un poder absoluto del manejo de la policía de estas personas. Y como le digo, una ley carcelaria que tenía creo que más de 2 años de estar engavetada porque a nadie le interesaba realmente mejorar esta situación. Aquí los intereses particulares y las situaciones políticas prevalecen ante los derechos de las personas. Yo sinceramente le digo, esto me duele porque ahí en esas cárceles es cierto, hay personas que cometieron delitos, sin embargo hay otras personas, como un hombre que mencionaron ahí, de un señor que lo metieron preso por andar ebrio, él no debió ni siquiera haber estado en un centro penal, y sin embargo lo mandan a un centro penal por andar en estado de ebriedad, y solo para que fuera a morir en esa forma tan horrible.
Y Ala dice que si bien no se ha castigado a los...
Y eso es total, más tarde... Un otro día. Gracias, and thank you for the, I guess we've been listening to, it says KPFK, but I'm not sure what exactly that show was. You are tuned, however, to freakradio.org. That's 101.3 FM. It used to be one. Freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and coming up next, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides Online. A couple of teasers for Sunday's longer show. We're going to play a bit of the whoop-de-doo that happens every Wednesday night when Mayor Don Lane's homelessness panel discussion hour, I guess it's a free radio, it's a SUCSC class happens over at the Civic Auditorium. Plus some highlights of the protest yesterday, or possibly just the entire damn thing, at the 74 River Street. 75, of course, is across the street, and the subject of 22 felonies and 44 misdemeanors. But that is another story. Stay tuned.
Join in. They can hear you over to Washington, D.C.
Bubbles for Iraq. Bubbles for Iraq. I've got some shiny little, tiny little soap bubbles for Iraq. I've got some bubbles for Iraq. This is my offering. This is my offering. This is my offering. This is my offering.
To ease the hurt.
Delay the pain. Won't go down the drain. How can I explain? Away. Missiles for Iraq. Missiles for Iraq. I've got some shiny little, tiny little death missiles for Iraq. This is my cleansing. This is my purging. This is my purging. This is my putting.
And clean the land.
Open your hand. Bury you in sand. You will understand.
You can all join in.
Missiles for Iraq.
It's not here, but no, okay, now it comes.
I've got some shiny little, tiny little soap bubbles for Iraq.
Don't be shy now.
I've got some shiny little, tiny little death missiles for Iraq.
Okay, this side of the room, death missiles.
I've got some shiny little, tiny little death missiles for Iraq.
Okay, this side of the room, soap bubbles.
I've got some shiny little, tiny little soap bubbles for Iraq.
Hey, now raise your voices all together.
I've got some shiny little, tiny little death missiles for Iraq.
Okay, one more time.
So, that was a little something. I don't believe that was a copyrighted song from Matthew Embry, live on tape. Matthew is, it's a work in progress records, and it was Bubbles for Iraq. Thank you, Matthew. You sent me that CD, and you see, it got played. I'm playing a little bit more of your stuff. Matthew, of course, is a former free radio broadcaster and an occasional caller who calls from L.A. The voice you may hear in the background is the uninvited guest, Free, who has been helping one of our new broadcasters do some downloading. Sometimes requires patience, perhaps more than some of us have. At least Daryl is doing downloading. I think I download very rarely. Occasionally, actually on Sunday, I do download. That, what that means, listeners, is that the canned shows you hear on Free Radio, which are often very good. I like Making Contact, for instance, which goes right after my Sunday show, is has to be put into a machine here and queued up and so forth. And for those of us who would rather be eating or sleeping, it's, you know, a small burden. So it requires training, and sometimes it's harder to learn than others. For some, it's harder to learn. And anyway, if you want to help people learn here, your best bet is to fork over some money out there. We need bucks. We need labor. We need support.
More than anything.
I need a good attorney. I'm sorry, what?
More than anything, we need like a really cheap studio.
And Free Feels, we need a very cheap studio.
That's where we lose most of our money.
He, of course, is talking into the room, so you can hardly hear him, which may be an advantage in this situation. But in any case, you can get in touch with Freak Radio by going to the website, freakradio.org, and donating, because indeed Free Radio, as you probably have heard before, if you're a regular listener, is short of cash. We need bucks. And apparently the principal is running out. That is to say, the amount of money we have, that kind of the nest egg. I don't even know if we have a nest egg. It's a very small amount of money. It's some has to do with the fact that people aren't paying their dues. Some of it has to do with the fact that there aren't perhaps as many broadcasters. I'm not sure what the reason is. I'm often sort of a peripheral person, more interested in talking than in fundraising, but I may end up not having anybody to talk to or anything to talk over if Free Radio goes off the air. So think about giving a donation to freakradio.org and go there to the website, and you'll be able to do that if you'd like. Free is looking like he wants. He's clutching the mic.
Well, there was a joke I just had to go for.
Uh-oh.
As you well know, Robert has two shows here. So if he does go to jail for felonies and is gone for a long time, Free Radio will be broke.
Now, that, of course, is another fanciful.
Because Robert does pay his dues.
Well, I do pay my dues. But there are others.
He doesn't even get a discount. And he rarely goes to the meeting.
There are others who pay dues as well. And it'd be good if there was more money coming in. But in the meantime, do listen in and do call in and do tell me what your thoughts are as you listen to the show, because, frankly, it's rather boring if I'm just talking to myself, interesting as I am to myself. And interesting as Free can be. Free does a show still on Tuesday, I believe, Free. You show
sometimes
up on Tuesday.
I'm sometimes there to be obnoxious.
Free is actually not just obnoxious. He is an interviewer. He interviews guests, sometimes very distinguished guests that
almost
call in. Like myself.
Okay.
And more important, I think, you know, this show...
Mostly just local people, though.
And pre-show tries to cover local issues, and that really is what I'm about.
Free Radio's about, too. That's why we have this pirating radio, so that local people
I think it is about local issues, although some would say it's also about national issues that don't get enough coverage.
There's that, too.
You know, and that's also...
That's what local people care about in this town.
So what I'm going to begin with today is... you know, actually, a kind of a, some may say it's a filler. I don't really think so. I found it interesting. I've been doing commentaries on community TV. Once a month, Sandra Lee puts me on her show, and I get to do rant on for about 5 minutes. Or, you know, I try to make some comments that I think are pertinent, appropriate, honest, truthful, and brush after every meal. In other words, I feel that... I try to say things that I don't think people are normally going to hear on community TV. They may hear them on this radio station perhaps too frequently, but they don't hear them on community TV. And this is a show, again, I think it happens Tuesday nights. It's called Issues 2012. Although this show, some of these shows are from 2011. I'm going to play one or two of these rants, and while I'm doing that, I will be studiously working on other matters that you may hear about later in the show. The call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772. And my guest in the studio, of course, is the noteworthy Free, whose show, is it still called Tangerine Dream Team?
Or? I'm Free the Land. I'm all about
Free the Land. And that's on Tuesday nights from, what, 6 to 9?
Sometimes I'm at 6, sometimes I'm at 8, sometimes I'm just...
You gotta
I'm a gorilla show.
Keep
I'm
going
on
through
the schedule
and yeah. figure out when you come on. Yeah, that, and I found that I've often found the show very interesting. I know that we've also been... I came into the studio. You were a little frustrated with Daryl Blair, and Daryl is one of our new broadcasters who's learning, hopefully, how to download shows.
Now you're not supposed to say people's names, right?
Well, you know how it is. I'm a constant violator of the rules, sometimes out of complete weariness or obliviousness. But Daryl is also is an individual covering local issues. I believe. Mm-hmm. Did you hear his show today?
We talked a little bit. And
What were any issues other than his perennial, give me a 501c3 and I'll go to heaven with it?
I did. We mostly put on music, and then we were working on the technical stuff. For the
I see.
Time.
So there wasn't
really get a chance.
Not
I heard
much.
He was saying something about homeless issues when I was outside the door, so I hung out there for a few minutes before
I
came in.
Because I know that when I heard you interview him on your show some shows ago, and I believe those shows are archived.
That one's archived, yeah. It's at the top of the archive. You go to freakradio.org.
What's it called?
I think it's Homeless Advocate Speaks Out or Gets to Speak Out.
Because I thought, you know, I mean, he
did a really good job, yeah.
He was quite pungent. He didn't just stick on one issue. He went to a number of issues. And, you know, he gets very upset. I've seen him come to, for example, general assemblies of Occupy Santa Cruz, one of which is happening tonight, by the way, at 6 o'clock in front of the courthouse, for those of you who want to go down there. And, you know, he can get very upset when he feels he's not getting enough time or he's not getting placed in the proper position and people aren't listening to him, don't understand the importance of his ideas and so forth.
He got cut off a lot at Occupy. That was the thing. He'd be perfect for a radio show. So.
Yeah, and hopefully he'll be able to do that show, which he does every Thursday from, what, 2 to 4,
Thursday
2 to 5, something like that. So,
but the technical stuff is kind of overwhelming him right now, because there is a lot of stuff. I mean, you got to talk, you got to
hopefully
these
that'll
levers,
be, you know,
the computer's got all this crap.
Listen to his show if you're a regular listener and you feel like it, and do give me what your opinion, because I don't, and not because I don't have dislike Daryl, but
You're in transit at that time, aren't you?
Well, not so much in transit. Now, today, for example, I was doing an op-ed piece for the Sentinel, this Santa Cruz Urinal, as I call it, or the Sentinel, as they call themselves, which generally does a horrible job of reporting civil rights issues around homeless. Or they don't even report them.
But they do cover
all.
Local news.
They claim to cover local news, and actually, I've been viewing past issues of the Sentinel. They cover it much more than they used to, strangely enough.
I know.
You wouldn't believe it, and many people don't, but that's what I, in fact, have found over the years as I go through my piles and piles of old newspapers.
Yeah, you don't go to the Sentinel to learn, you know.
Well, you should go
news.
To the Sunday Sentinels, because I'll be doing an op-ed piece, and it's already been written, and I think it's accepted by the editor, Don Miller, all about the recent prosecutions that 11 of us are facing for reporting on being around
crossing the threshold.
And supposedly crossing the threshold of 75 River Street, the vacant bank that was occupied for three days back
I heard
in
you just
November and early December.
To follow Catherine Byers into interviewers. And why isn't she
one
invited?
Of the defenses that is, I think, well, one of the, not just defenses against, but the common sense realities is that there were members of the city council went in, there were members of the community, police officers didn't stop people from going in and out for 3 days, yet they selected a number of, some would say, high-profile activists to really level very, very serious charges against two felonies punishable by, I think it's several years in state prison, and two misdemeanors punishable by probably 6 months each as a maximum. And that's and the felonies are for strange things like vandalism, which I've never been accused of before, or conspiracy to vandalize. Conspiracy is an interesting charge. I was talking to a lawyer today. Conspiracy doesn't necessarily mean, we sat down and we decided we were going to vandalize, you know, this building. Conspiracy can be something like, you know, we conspired to walk into a building after we had a plan to walk into this building, even though the owner hadn't given us a carte blanche. If we had a conspiracy to commit some crime, and as a foreseeable consequence, or because we failed to prevent it, some other crimes occurred, we are then responsible and in conspiracy to do those other crimes. Hence the dangerous nature of the conspiracy felony law, which,
it's
frankly,
ridiculous.
I had never been aware of before. And, of course, now I'm becoming, of course, very personally aware of it because I'm...
You already cited that for singing. You just didn't realize the full ramifications.
I was, in fact, convicted of singing homeless songs downtown.
And conspiring. That was part of it.
But I wasn't convicted of conspiring, but I was accused, and the judge felt that I had conspired to disturb the business of Bookshop Santa Cruz, or Bookshop Coonerty, as I call it, with the song, "When You're Alone and Rents Are Making You Homeless, You Can Always Go Downtown." That song, which we sang a year or 2 years ago.
Tickets are waiting for you.
Tickets are waiting. They were. And in fact, we were very prescient. We actually sang about our own fate. and it was kind of interesting. But now, conspiracy there, we weren't charged with that. We were just charged with an infraction that resulted in the longest infraction trial in Santa Cruz history. And who knows? Maybe we'll have the longest felony trial in Santa Cruz history, because this felony situation, I have not been able to get confirmation yet from other occupiers throughout the country. But it's my initial impression that we have been charged with more felonies than any city has, any occupy, even in such huge places as New York. Because in New York, they aren't stupid enough to charge a bunch of people with felonies, or perhaps they are and I haven't heard about it. And they did arrest a whole bunch of people and then didn't charge them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Occupy, this in Oakland, the same thing happened. They arrested 300 people, kettled them in late January, and let them all go. And then when they got to court, the charges disappeared. Now, some people are facing charges in Oakland, in Portland, and all and cities across the country. And, in fact, there is a nationwide crackdown on Occupies. And, mm-hmm. frankly, even though this this is not explicitly specified as being about Occupy by the authorities. I mean, why would they? They don't want to sound like they're trying to attack a mm-hmm. free speech movement or a
political
movement.
Then it wouldn't be content neutral.
Yeah, it wouldn't be, which is, of course, you know, a legal consideration for them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's hear some earlier stuff, which this is an example of the kind of, well, this is what you'll see and hear on community TV if you tune in to the Tuesday show Issues by Sandra Lee. And I think you can find back issues shows if you go to the community TV website in Santa Cruz. You can also call the station here if you want to suggest that you're getting a little bored with this old stuff, or you have some breaking news or some thoughts on important issues, or if you want to, you know, free, maybe looking for a date, I think.
No, free, I mean, I don't do it. He doesn't get in politics.
Doesn't
to
date,
get
doesn't eat food. What do you do, Free? I never get him to eat anything whenever he's
sitting. I meditate. Or,
he meditates.
I look at the
stars.
So
maybe you want to engage in Occupy Meditation, which is coming up as well.
There was one.
There is an Occupy Meditation. Now, I did snicker when I heard that, and I also snickered at the bake sale that some occupiers are doing, but I want to say that the same occupiers that I have had, sneered at and snickered at different points, came to the protest yesterday in front of the Wells Fargo Bank.
Uh-huh.
And there were many of us there. There were 50 or 60 at the height. The police, officers Warren and Winston, and it was my impression that they were unduly provocative. They came into the crowd. They seized one guy without telling him what he was. Well,
warrants?
Not for warrants. No, because they claimed, you see, the Wells Fargo sign had yellow tape wrapped around it, which said "crime scene, do not cross," indicating, of course, a sort of a First Amendment, somewhat whimsical statement that this is a crime scene at Wells Fargo Bank.
Oh, and some guy put that there.
And the police accused him of putting it. First, they accused him of trespass, and he then pulled out his Wells Fargo card and said, "No, I was at the ATM trying to,
always come prepared,
take some money out of the installer," because in fact the bank had been closed. The protest, although I wasn't aware of it, because I was in another side of the bank, was, according to the reporting by Indy Bay, and you can see photos there on SantaCruzIndyMedia.org for those of you who'd like to, IndyBay.org/Santa Cruz. The bank was closed starting in 3:45. They closed their doors because they were nervous about the protest outside. And the protesters, in these protests at the banks, we're not talking about violent people with rocks and guns and, all kinds of weapons. We're talking about people with signs who are just trying to tell the community what these banks have done.
Mm-hmm.
And this protest was also, of course, focused on the prosecutions of myself and 10 other people,
mm-hmm.
who are really not the central figures at all in any of these occupation movements or in the alleged break-in and trespass and vandalism at 75 River Street. We are reporters. Yes, again, and my attorney said every time you say that, you build a new block in the conspiracy charges against you, and I say,
why?
Well, because every time I say that I was in the building, even if Catherine Byers was in the building as she was, I know, she walked in with me.
Yeah.
I mean, that is to say, we walked in. She asked me, should I go in? And I said, well, there are many people in there. Catherine Byers and I are a well-known conspiratorial. We were not trying to engage in any kind of illegal behavior. It was our impression that this was open, an open area because of how the police were
open to the public, right? It was open. The police
the police were not excluding people. In any case, because of that, that.
That might be a defense.
But yes, well,
the door was open.
Certainly is going to be certainly going to be one of our defenses.
You didn't actually open the
door. The point is that, you know, we can joke about it all we want, but the fact is these are serious charges against reporters and bloggers and photographers. And it's going to take lots of money. At least, I understand it's $10,000 for a defense, not even to trial, but to what's called the preliminary hearing. So there, and so that at that preliminary hearing, each of these individuals that is charged, the county is going to have to pay for a separate lawyer, probably, for $10,000 each, except for those who have a are able to pay for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a cost of over $100,000 to start with.
Well, and, there's 11, right? So 110.
Yeah, it's at least 110. And, you know, then you've got to consider the cost of the trials, which...
And that's just on your side. Well, yeah, that's a kind
of That's prior to even the pretrial. I mean, you reach the preliminary hearing, and then people get transcripts of the preliminary... I mean, I'm not really that... I've never been in a felony trial before, mm-hmm. so I don't really know all the details. But I know that it's a serious expenditure for the county, and it seems to me to be... you know, I keep feeling baffled as to why they're trying to do this. It seems so, I mean, it's like they're swatting a fly with a sledgehammer. Well, mm-hmm. they can, but it's awfully expensive.
But the thing is, Robert, I hear this cost. It costs $70,000 for those police to be outside and try and break in. The thing is, that money's already spent. Those people are already putting that money in their pocket. So it doesn't, they don't care because they want that money. They don't care if you get your life gets fucked. Or how much it
costs.
Well,
it's not about my life.
They want to blame you for the money they're putting in their pocket.
Well, I'm just wondering if, you know, when D.A. Bob Lee looks at his budget, he really wants to spend probably several $100,000 at least on these trials. I guess he may be counting on the fact that some people are going
to
cut and run out of fear that they're going
to
be convicted,
yeah.
make deals, do plea bargains. And who knows? You know, one can never tell what's going to happen in that situation. But my op-ed piece, which will come out on Sunday, which I encourage people to read, it's not nothing terribly new that you haven't heard before. But, you know, I'm hoping that some people will say, wait a minute, you know, what is the county and the city doing here? This is simply wrong. And I guess what I'm saying is rather than spend a lot of time defending myself, because I'm going to be doing enough of that anyway, we have to keep on going with what we're doing. We have to continue to raise the issues, because that's really what this is about. I think what's really making the city and county nervous is the alternate legitimization of authority that is happening. People are realizing that the old authorities are bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's correct.
In the most, you know, both one sense and another sense, both the ethical sense and the financial sense.
Well, it's the financial.
Yeah.
No one gives a fuck until they lose their job and then they join
the
revolution.
We do have a caller. Let's
and
see
that's
who's
what's happening.
Calling in here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with.
Hey, Robert.
Hi, who's this?
Scott.
Hey, Scott. What's up?
Well, I was just listening to you going on about this court thing, and I have a feeling that the first judge this thing drops in front of, 90% of these people are going to have their things reduced down to a misdemeanor of trespass only. All these felony charges are going to disappear.
Well, you know, it's been suggested that, and I hope you're right, Scott, that would be great. I have no idea. You would think that was the case, considering the very thin discovery that they've already provided to one of the defendants, Becky Johnson, which appears to be, you know, police reports that saw, we saw so-and-so in the building, we saw such-and-such in the building, we saw so-and-so in the building. I don't recall there's any indication of anybody vandalizing anything, for instance, or even talking about vandalizing anything. But this may mean that they're simply holding back discovery. I mean, I don't know, you know.
Well, the vandalism charge will be hard to prove, especially on a, you know, blanket on 10, 11, or, you know, a couple. And the police are saying they have more people that they're going to bring charges against later. So it's really hard to prove unless they had somebody on the inside. And so I think a lot of people are going to end up with just the trespass charge, which may eventually get dropped too. Anyway, I got to run, Robert.
Well, thanks, Scott. I hope you're right. Scott is a longtime council observer. I call him Scope It Out Scott because he's... I'm always usually credulous enough to follow his perspective on a number of issues until I learn better. Then, of course, we may part ways. But, yeah, that could be, again, I want this show to be all about, it is, of course, all about me. We know that, and I'm a very interesting fellow. But these are really very stupid charges, and the issue really is what can be done in the meantime to raise the real issues about the real power mongers in Santa Cruz, about the real abuses that are taking place around financial institutions and police authorities and private or semi-public associations that are conspiring to criminalize and take away people's rights, particularly those of poor people.
Mm-hmm.
These are my concerns. Let's hear what that infamous spokesperson, Robert Norris, has to say on his The Sandra Lee Show as of a couple months ago.
My name is Robert Norris, and glad to be with you again. I do a weekly commentary, and this week I actually got a commentary in the Sentinel in early October, a week and a half ago. I did an editorial piece because the Santa Cruz City Council just spent they spent $150,000 altogether in a lawsuit in which they wanted to justify their right to arrest people at City Council whose views they don't like by terming those views disruptive. I did this at City Council after a mayor attempted to exclude a speaker inappropriately for talking on a peace issue where she had the right to speak. This was 9 years ago, and we're still going forward, but three mayors are now facing trial, former mayors, again, at city expense. I've offered to drop all my financial demands if the city agrees to end the harassment of homeless people at night for the crime of sleeping outside. That, of course, is not a crime. It's a necessity. It's something we need, and, of course, the elimination of that, the penalization of people for sleeping at night, is a form of torture. But in Santa Cruz, of course, it's business as usual with the Parks and Rec, the Santa Cruz Police Department, and now it seems with the county sheriffs against Occupy Santa Cruz, a protest that has been going on for a week now as I speak at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse. But it's three times, twice by sheriffs and once by Santa Cruz police, been threatened with removal, confiscation of property, arrest, citation, trial, and up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for the so-called crime of lodging. That which means essentially holding up a sign, being there overnight, and possibly resting while you're doing so. That is a crime in Santa Cruz. It's already the fate of two people, Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, activists who did this a year ago with what they call Peace Camp 2010, a protest for homeless civil rights. They now face 6 months in jail. They've been sentenced to it. They've already served 2 weeks of that 6 months, and now they're appealing, but the appeal, because the judges in our system are pretty close together with each other, pretty close to the DAs, they're likely to have to serve out this sentence. More important than that, even, protesters who are raising their voices across the country and across the county now, and here in the city of Santa Cruz with Occupy Santa Cruz, will face the same threat, the 647E Penal Code Lodging Law. And what I'm talking about generally is the intolerance of city and county authorities for protest. So I've written about the useless and arrogant appropriations of city funds by the Coonerty Lane City Council, the Santa Cruz Police Department, City Manager Martin Bernal, and City Attorney John Barisoni, which magnifies the already abusive power of City Council and the mayor to channel, co-opt, and ultimately suppress public comment at public meetings, the City Council meetings, which happen twice a month. Now we have the police and the deputies moving to suppress, or threatening to suppress, this kind of behavior, as was been done recently in Denver, Colorado, and they were threatened in New York City. The power of the people to assemble and to present grievances to the government, to find their own way when the city council and other legislatures and the Obama regime and the Bush regime before it cannot, because they are captives of a whole financial power imperial militaristic structure, which we know is driving the country into bankruptcy and threatening war worldwide, in fact, engaging in war worldwide. The economic crisis has only laid bare what has been clear to many for decades in the Santa Cruz, the power of money to thwart justice and the public will. Large developers like Swenson and Au, local moguls like Charlie Canfield of the Seaside Company, conservative groups like the Downtown Association, Santa Cruz Neighbors, and the Santa Cruz Police Department have essentially dictated the public agenda. This agenda ignores the public and is ratified by a council regardless of the public testimony. Trying to reform this process from the inside is a rigged game. But now we have Occupy Santa Cruz. in concert with 1,600 other occupations throughout the country. This is the chance of a community to finally stand up, not only be heard, but to make the kind of changes that the leaders will not make, cannot make, and won't make. This is our opportunity. Come down to Occupy Santa Cruz at the Santa Cruz City County Courthouse and the San Lorenzo Park area. They need food. They need support. They need your voice. They need your support if you're not even there. Do what you can to help them, because this is a real opportunity that we have not had before. It's happening all over. My name is Robert Norris. I speak on Free Radio Santa Cruz Thursdays between 6 and 8 in the evenings and Sundays 9:30 to 1 in the mornings. You can check me out there at freakradio.org. Again, thank you for letting me have these words with you tonight.
And that was indeed, sounds like the, probably the October, maybe the November, I think it was the October Occupy situation. It was the October show for Sandra Lee. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. And I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. A couple of points. Tomorrow is, in fact, a hearing for Gary Johnson, the activist who faces four more charges of lodging for essentially sleeping on a bench in front of the county building with a sign, sleep is not a crime, at least on some of the occasions. On some of the occasions, they stole the sign from him, took his bedding, and so forth. I write about this on IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and I've actually posted today some of the legal pleadings for those of you legal buffs who'd like to kind of see what's happening there. Free has the guy who was in the studio previously, he's taken off. He has been very much interested in the legal machinations around this case. And the issues are really important because this law, 647E, is used against Occupy Santa Cruz people, against homeless people, against political protesters of all stripes who want to do any kind of overnight vigil or protest. So it's something that is being argued tomorrow at 1:30 in Department 2 at 701 Ocean Street, the county courthouse. And Department 2 is on the main floor, and that's actually only one floor in the county building. I mean in the courthouse, which is next to the five-story county building. And it's Ed Fry, I think, is asking folks to attend. He's at the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly, I imagine, tonight, and so he can get pretty gruff if you try to disturb him at these assemblies. He takes them quite seriously, and perhaps they don't take him as seriously, but he has been a constant legal resource for Occupy Santa Cruz and for homeless people, one after another, who have got his both legal counsel and his moral, financial, and material support. I mean, it was Ed Fry who started Peace Camp 2010. By sleeping out there himself, I did that with him for the first five nights of Peace Camp 2010 in July of 2010. And so did a number of other people. But he is the one who came back every night with a porta potty for people to use, actually making it the most sanitary homeless protest I've ever seen. Or smelled, for that matter, and it was good news. And so anyway, he's going to be arguing tomorrow that the charges against Gary Johnson are based on an unconstitutional law, 647E. Unfortunately, he'll be arguing that this lodging law is unconstitutional before a judge who's already rejected these arguments. So my thought has always been, why bother with this? Why not just go directly to trial and try to get a fair shake from a jury? At least get one juror to say, what, you want to send him to jail for sleeping? Come on. Admittedly, this is harder than it sounds. You think, well, most people have a common sense to say no. But a lot of people really follow authority very cautiously, subserviently, and obediently. They really do. And myself included at different points, depending on the authority in question. We are kind of trained and conditioned to do this rather than to trust our own feelings and our own conscience and our own sentiments. Unless it's really a clear case, then it becomes different. But it's hard when you enter this labyrinth of the courts. Anyway, if you want more information about it, you should go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org, where I again posted this well, a series of four briefs, both the briefs from Ed Frey, legal briefs, and the response by the district attorney's office claiming that, disputing Ed Frey's argument. It's called Sleep Criminal Again in Court, and you can check that out or come down to court tomorrow at 1:30. I'll probably be there. I suspect I will. Just to support Gary and be in solidarity with him, as many of us have tried to do throughout, because I certainly wouldn't have the resolve, the persistence, maybe the foolishness of constantly confronting this unjust law and prosecution and assertion of power and authority by the county against all political protesters, against every member of the public, actually. Who wants to simply sit on the steps of the courthouse and hold a sign at night. That is not a crime, and yet it is being treated as a crime, and the people, there's a man in jail tonight because of that. And in fact, Gary, both Gary and Ed face up to 6 months in jail now. Well, they face 5 months and two weeks in jail. They're on appeal. They've already served 2 weeks of a prior 647E crime, which I, of course, mention again because it's still as grim and as unjust and as onerous and as shameful for the rest of us as it was when I first mentioned it. Also online, I have a response to a nice presentation and coverage of the conspiracy to commit journalism that happened. Well, actually, it's the Wells Fargo protest that happened yesterday. And I'm going to play some tape on that pretty soon, I hope. I'm going to get to that tape. Bradley Stewart has a great article on this issue. He writes on February 15th, that was yesterday, a few dozen people organized for Occupy Santa Cruz demonstrated in front of the Wells Fargo banking branch. Actually, it wasn't a few dozen. It was 50. I counted them. Actually, more between 50 and 60 is what I counted. And I didn't count each one individually, but I counted them in clumps. And there were, at its height, there were a considerable number of people there on the sidewalk holding up signs. And he writes about the story, and I'm glad he does, because I got distracted by the police. The police were harassing and invading and maintaining a provocative presence and upsetting a lot of us. In past protests, I've been very careful. Not because of a lot of fear of the police, though I'm as afraid of the police as anybody, I'll tell you. These are armed individuals with essentially a conspiracy to send you to jail at their whim, if they wish. And they have the judges and the money and the district attorneys and the compliant city officials to do it. But because I've been focused on the issues of the protests I've been in, and it's really important to keep, you know, getting back to the issue, yes, we're here because we're against the laws that criminalize the homeless. Yes, we're here because Wells Fargo Bank is ripping off the community. Yes, we're here because certain city officials are colluding in this. Yes, we're here because the certain police officers on a certain date against a certain individual abuse that person's rights and the higher officials are doing nothing about it. It's really important to focus on those particular issues and to address yourself not to the police department, not even to the city officials, really, but to the community. Because the community is the source of power here. And also the community is the source of wisdom. And the community is the source of strength. And the community is the people that we're talking to. And that's why I'm here on the radio talking, in fact. And that's why I'm so pissed at these prosecutions. Because I think that's the punishment for what I do. And it's probably quite to be expected. But it's still outrageous. And I would hope the community shares some of the outrage I feel about it. Continuing with the story by Bradley Stewart, the demonstration was for 11 people criminally charged on February 7th for the occupation of a former bank building located across the street at 75 River Street, now owned by Wells Fargo and sitting vacant, which began the occupation, that is, on November 30th, 2011, the occupation of the vacant bank building. Demonstrators held signs yesterday that read, "Arrest the real criminals. Banksters launder $300 billion for the Mexican drug cartels. Stop foreclosures. Drop the charges against the Santa Cruz 11, community spaces, not vacant places, and occupy Earth." The protest began at 3 p.m., and by 3:40, Wells Fargo had locked their doors and instructed their private security guards to inform customers that the bank was closed. In an announcement for the demonstration, Occupy Santa Cruz wrote, 22 felony charges have been filed against 11 peaceful Santa Cruz activists, while banksters, such as those at Wells Fargo, who launder drug cartel money, illegally repossess our homes using forged foreclosure documents, and reward themselves with hundreds of millions in bonuses of our tax dollars, walk free. Demand the arrest and prosecution of the real criminals, the banksters. And there's a lot of photos here that are kind of interesting, of police officers, police cars, some of the very colorful signs that are there. There's a cop standing in front of the Wells Fargo Bank, again, showing the fact that somehow the banks have some sort of special privileges, even though Santa Cruz activists have never invaded a bank building that was open for business. In fact, it's the bank that in paranoia has been closing down. And we have, again, a lot of good photos. A lot of the activists from Occupy Santa Cruz were there, both people who are more militant and people who are more conservative. And it was really quite reassuring. I wrote a response, too, which you can read online, and it's pretty lengthy. So rather than read it, I'll just refer you to it. And there's somebody who signs himself Winston, which is the name of one of the police officers, but I'm sure isn't only limited to him, states, "You didn't realize that going onto the property without the owner's permission was criminal trespass. You are resident legal eagle, really? No, really?" And I'm not sure who he's referring to. He might be referring to the comment I wrote above. I'm impressed if Officer Winston is really willing to enter into a dialogue. Hats off to him for doing that, if he's willing to do it. He was one of the two officers that sat across the street in a squad car. I presumed he was filming people, but they were certainly watching, and they later claimed, at least I think Officer Warren, who was his companion, claimed they were filming people in the crowd, and then they entered the crowd. Well, yeah, I might as well read some of what I wrote. Officers Winston and Warren, I write, and I think this is accurate, provoked an angry response from about half of the 50 to 60 protesters. They sat in their squad car across the street, apparently videoing the peaceful protest, a form of surveillance I thought was unconstitutional, but then that's apparently stranded operating procedure these days. In other words, you're not supposed to, I think, to be videoing protest unless it's criminal behavior, not just for the heck of it. Or I guess I also want to be sure that if these are, maybe they're afraid that criminal behavior is going to break out at any point, but the idea that you suddenly have all this data on film and on computer of peaceful protesters is exactly the kind of thing that safeguards supposedly were put into place after the 60s FBI COINTELPRO operations, and the kind of counterintelligence against political protesters who were trying to end the Vietnam War, just as many of these protesters are interested in ending the wars in Afghanistan and the Middle East that the Obama and Bush regimes are pursuing so vigorously, or with so many excuses. At some point, the two officers left their cars, walked across the street, moved into the crowd of folks holding signs, and physically grabbed a protester. They then dragged him across the street as he demanded to know what was going on. First, they accused him of trespass. He pointed out he had a Wells Fargo card, meaning an ATM card, and was trying to use the ATM machine there. They then accused him of vandalism, which sounds trespass and vandalism, the crimes they're trying to pin on people in order to deter future protests, is indeed my kind of shorthand analysis of both this and the prosecutions against me and others of the more serious nature, saying he'd wrapped some yellow tape emblazoned with the words "crime scene, do not cross" around a Wells Fargo sign on the edge of the property. Since it was clear that no damage had been done by the tape, it seemed to be a frivolous charge. In fact, later I wondered why the police didn't demand the security guard return the tape to its owner after the security guard had taken the tape. The tape was surely private property and a First Amendment device to identify Wells Fargo to the community as a criminally predatory lending institution and property speculator. The security guard refused my pleas to mend the error of his ways and give back the tape to its rightful owner, instead demanding that the protesters, whether they had ATM Wells Fargo cards or not, get off the property, even though they were presumably legitimate customers of Wells Fargo. You might say, well, the bank was closed. Yes, it was, but people were still using the ATM machines. After much hubbub and hassle, Warren and Wilson let the man go, but that wasn't all. Sergeant Garner arrived on the scene with more officers. Ultimately, there were at least five squad cars and a motorcycle. Again, part of this really now quite routine over-policing appearance of massive police force on the most flimsy of pretexts that's happening regularly downtown. I don't know if this is because Take Back Santa Cruz is now stacking the commissions and as a secret entree into the council, you know, or whether, you know, the downtown neighbors or the Santa Cruz neighbors or, I don't know, the Coonerty majority on the city council has especially special power and influence. I don't know what it is, but it seems to be really a significant change from, let's say, 5 or 6 years ago, when I was still complaining, and as I have been for decades, about police misconduct against poor people. But it wasn't happening in the numbers and the intensity and the regularity, even in the midst of this supposed budget crisis, in the midst of a recession. And it's just, it's really quite... Well, quite clear that seems to be happening to me. I'm not usually... It's hard for me sometimes to compare one era with another. I'll often ask people, what happened? How does this compare with, you know, 20 years ago and 30 years ago? Because I'd like to get other people's sense of how things have changed. Because I often don't have that kind of perspective, really. Though I've been around, you know. I guess I'm getting old and my memory's getting creaky, or I have a very selective memory or a selective perception of things. But I like to know this. But in this situation, it really does seem to me, you know, that you have this massive and routine police overreaction. Anyway, that's what happened yesterday as well. Even to the extent of high-ranking police officials showing up, not just showing up, but standing around and mocking the protesters, sneering at the protesters, and sort of baiting the protesters. Admittedly, there was some counter-baiting going back and forth in the sense that protesters angrily protested the police presence there, wondering why they were there. I was quite outspoken in what I said, suggesting that Deputy Chief Clark had better business to do somewhere else, that were there no crimes elsewhere, and you know, how much money was he getting paid to do this? Why so many police officers standing across the street watching a protest? And he called me a liar, and I said, oh, really? What lies do you have to present today that are, you know, that exemplify what have I lied about? And he couldn't think of a one, but he told me he'd get back to me, so maybe he'll call in. Could be. So, continuing, after the protester who first was accused of trespass and then of vandalism for allegedly wrapping yellow tape around the Wells Fargo sign, and we're not talking sticky tape, or this is the kind of, you know, loose plastic tape that is found when you have a, you know, police lines do not cross, crime scene do not cross tape. Sergeant Garner arrived, tried to force reporters and photographers away from Officers Warren and Winston. Garner earned the name, I add, Grim Grip Garner from me back in 1998 when he assaulted socialist Steve Argue for selling a street newspaper, Street Spirit actually, in front of New Leaf Market in what was clearly exposed, the downtown New Leaf Market, as an unlawful arrest. And I give some references for those who want to kind of review that ancient bit of history, but interesting history nonetheless. And I've got to be candid, I haven't heard a lot of bad press about Sergeant Garner recently. I'm glad if he's improved in his conduct. He was horrible 14 years ago. But, you know, people can change. I'm not saying he hasn't changed. However, he was attempting to keep reporters and photographers away from Officers Warren and Winston as they engaged in what appeared to be pretty clearly harassment behavior against the first protester. And then two more police officers harassed a man on probation and parole with a body search with no articulated reasonable suspicion and what seemed an obvious retaliation of the man's presence at the protest. And that upset a lot of people because he was singled out by an officer Padillo, is that his name? Simply for being there and made to sit down, made to empty his pockets, made to take off his shoes, all these things. Not because there was anything, but because they could do it, because they could. A third woman, a short female journalist, was reduced to tears by being physically grabbed, interrogated, and ID checked, apparently for walking in the bike lane, as many people were doing, including the police. Presiding over all this, again, was Deputy Chief Steve Clark. He actually showed up somewhat after the first several harassments happened, with his usual smug smile, and I hate to say it, but that is really a part of Steve Clark's normal demeanor. And I'm not trying to play this situation false. That's how it appears to me. And a series of explicit insults denouncing protesters. Clark's platoon then set up its own crime scene do not cross tape across the parking lot that they were standing in and stood there for half an hour surveilling the protesters. Why? I was reminded of Clark's classic response back in 1996. I always go back historically, and again, you know, you can judge for yourself how relevant that is. When he was a sergeant covering City Hall. At that time, homeless protesters held an 8.5-month vigil trying to end the sleeping in blanket bans, which criminalized sleeping outside or covering up with blankets after 11 p.m. Clark cited several protesters for their blankets, then confiscated them. "Why are you taking our only protection against the cold," asked one protester, "when you can simply take photos of them?" "Because I can," replied Clark. At the protest Wednesday, I did a lot of speaking up as police carried out these abusive actions, and I talked some more about that and the merits of speaking up versus the merits of keeping your mouth shut. And I referenced the Sentinel article, which there was an article in the Sentinel, not really about the protest, more about another individual, Ed Rector, who I don't know, being prosecuted, going to arraignment. And there were a number of reporters there, City and Hill Press, Good Times, Santa Cruz Patch, and I'm glad that people did show up. Let's take a brief musical break and maybe a break from my voice if somebody else wants to call in and comment or give us some updates. Again, remind you that while this show is going on, you can also be a part of an ongoing dialogue and discussion and planning activity at Occupy Santa Cruz. Perhaps the conspiracy to, restore justice in Santa Cruz County. I regard that as, you know, the highest form of conspiracy, and that's a form of a legal gathering. I guess we wouldn't call it conspiracy except in the satirical sense. But maybe the opposition to these actions would, the opposition to the protests that expose the brutality and stupidity of decisions made by the high command and the police department and the city council and the city manager's office and the county institutions as well. So, just a couple of quick announcements before I leave this. Let's see what I got here. There actually are a number of protests coming up that are referenced on a flyer that I distributed and then posted on Santa Cruz Indie Media, which I encourage people to take a look at if they're interested. Let's see if we can find that. It's, again, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz for those of you who have computers. And it's under Conspiracy to Commit Journalism, Free the Santa Cruz 11. And there's both a petition, Restore Civil Liberties in Santa Cruz, and another flyer which says, Arrest the Real Criminals, Free the Santa Cruz 11. This is a flyer that I put out and distributed during the protest. That arraignments are coming up for Grant Wilson, Franklin Alcantara, and myself on Tuesday, February 21st, in Department 7 at 8 a.m. In fact, we'll begin probably in front of the county courthouse with some coffee for supporters and maybe a few speeches and trying to mobilize people to be present in the courtroom to just sort of hopefully present the withering public eye as these absurd charges are presented with straight faces by the district attorney and their minions. There are other court dates mentioned on this flyer. As I mentioned before, there's a demurrer hearing tomorrow for Ground Zero Gary Johnson, as I call him. He's in jail for sleeping in front of the courthouse with that sign, "Sleep is not a crime." That's at 1:30 in Department 2. There are arraignments for Gabriella and Brent, activists, and that's going to be on February 28th, a week after the arraignments of myself and a couple of other activists, next Tuesday. Alex DeRosi has an arraignment on Wednesday, the 29th of February. Desiree has one on March 2nd. They're all listed online for those of you who are interested. But we have a caller. Hey there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi, thanks, Robert. This is Paul from the Vets Hall.
Hey, Paul, what's up?
I just talked to Neil Cooney last night on the radio on KSDO about the Vets Hall.
Uh-huh.
And he said it would be open in a year and that it was closed because of the danger of supposedly something in the pillars that holds up the roof, et cetera, were sort of corroding from water drips that were eating away at the supports. So it's going to be about a year. I wanted to say that. Also, I wanted to mention Gary Johnson. I met a woman downtown who used to be related to him as a girlfriend-boyfriend thing.
Uh-huh.
And she said he actually killed her mom, okay? Every time I go downtown, she's down there, and she says, pray for me, because he's hexing me. You know?
You know, I think that's another Gary, not Gary Johnson. I think I've met that woman. She does talk about Gary, and I've talked to her, but that's not... I'd be very surprised that's Gary Johnson, because...
Well, do you know if Gary Johnson has a beard?
Gary Johnson is in jail right now.
Does he have a beard?
He has had a beard at different points in the past, but he's usually been clean-shaven. But he has had a beard on occasion.
Was this beard kind of like, not close to the face, but kind of like, you know, a big beard, kind of?
Not, you know, it's been longer at times and shorter at times, so I don't know. I know that I find the woman, should we say... She doesn't persuade me. I know she's very upset, and she seems very... I mean, she doesn't... I don't know what the story is. She keeps talking about Gary, but she's never used the word Gary Johnson with me.
Yeah, that's what she said to me, Gary Johnson.
Well, maybe I think she may be picking up on, you know, Gary Johnson is now a political figure because he's been held in jail. But there are plenty of Garys around. That's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I just want to mention that as a community... watch out, because sometimes you support people and you're not really sure, you know, you think it's the cause, but sometimes...
Right, and sometimes you believe people who are hysterical on the streets who aren't giving you accurate information, so you could be, you know, so I don't know, you know.
I mean, I'm not saying it's an accurate portrayal.
Right, but we're spending a lot of time talking about it. I've told you my impression of it, and I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I also want to say about the Vets Hall, I don't agree with Neil Cooney, and neither did the engineers that the Vets hired. I think he's full of shit.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think that they have other motivations for wanting to deal with the Vets Hall. I think it had to do to some extent with the internal politics of Bratton.
Okay.
And I don't know, you know, I have no real evidence on that regard, except I was told by Bob Patton that two engineers hired by the Vets specifically found that there was a minor bit of damage. All they needed to do was close off a part of the Vets Hall.
Ah.
And they didn't need to do what they did. And I was sad that there wasn't, frankly, an occupation of the Vets Hall by the Vets. I thought
right.
That would have been a very good idea. I think others of us, you know, certainly would have been sympathetic to that. And I think that, you know, it's
saved
just
a lot
too
of
bad.
Money too, right? It saved a lot of payroll and expenses for heating the building because it was the winter time when they closed it. And so I think it had something to do with the budget as well. You know how they're cutting, and they've been cutting for the last
year? It could be. It could very well be. And I think, I mean, Neil Cooney to me is not a good source for a couple of reasons. First, he's politically involved, and so, you know, he is, he has
compromise, you think?
He's likely to have to defend his position, so he doesn't, you know, he's accountable, or he should be accountable. He's actually not accountable, I don't think, and therefore he has to give the impression or illusion that he is accountable.
Huh.
I have to say, full disclosure, that I'm no friend of Neil Cunady. Neil Cunady evicted me from his bookstore in 1994 because of protests against the bookstore. When subsequent to those protests, someone threw a rock through his window. He blamed me, banned me from the store.
He connected that with you, yeah.
He claimed it was, you know, because of my instigation. I told him, no, I don't recommend that kind of vandalism.
Right.
I never have. I've often said I understand it when it happens. I understand the rage people feel, but, you know, it's usually quite counterproductive. You know, it gives police an opportunity to start leveling felony charges, for instance.
You got that right, yeah.
You know.
Well, I wish you good luck with that, and Grant Wilson is, like, to me, a shiny example of what a good citizen should be, and just like Ed Fry was attacked, you know? So it's almost like if you side with the court, you know, you're trying to, you know, shake up the status quo, then automatically you're on the enemy list, and, you know, like they say, the big nail gets knocked down, you know?
I think that's true to some extent. I also think it's true that it looks to me like shoddy police work. Like, the police did not really do, I've read the discovery that I've seen, there isn't, you know, there isn't testimony about anybody vandalizing, and I mean, it's possible, who knows what what the real situation is, but it doesn't look to me like whoever actually did plan this is a part of that group of people who were indicted. I mean, you know, I don't know everything that went down. I was not part of a conspiracy to even occupy the building, much less to vandalize it.
Well,
the
funny thing is, if you do work for a radio station and you do community outreach, I think as long as you didn't, quote-unquote, do any physical breaking in or any physical destruction, then obviously you didn't really create a problem. You're just observing the scene and trying to report it for the community. So to me, that's something that you could be defended upon.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I said, they are, you know, we went inside the building, as did council members and city managers and their children and many community members and many other journalists. But for some reason, we were singled out as being somehow trespassers, whereas others were not. And that we were being, you know, it looks to, like a combination of selective prosecution, going after some and not going after others. But also it looks like, again, as I said, singling out high-profile activists, gadflies, journalists who, you know, they recognize by the face. There's a lot of people there. Some people covered their faces, you know, and you couldn't see who they were. So these are people who may have played a higher role in the occupation or the vandalism or whatever it was, but they weren't, you know, easily identifiable. Right, you know, and
yeah,
so
right.
So therefore, why not go after the people that you know who they are? Oh, yeah, you know, go after those guys. And so,
easy pickings, yeah.
I mean, that, you know, it's hard to figure out why, you know, you'd have to be a confidant of Police Chief Vogel to actually figure out.
And Zach Friend, of course, couldn't give you any help on that.
Zach is not called into the show, no.
Yeah, well, I wish you luck with that, Robert.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And remember, everybody out there, if you're charged with felony conspiracy, don't talk about it on the air like I am. It's not the wisest thing to do. But if you also have a kind of a conflict of interest here, because I'm trying to be honest and above board about what I've seen, I am a reporter as well as a defendant, which is a problem for me. And I guess, who knows, I may be counting my news stories behind bars if... Not because I've done anything that is a criminal behavior, but you can be convicted of things that you wouldn't have thought had anything to do with real crimes, such as singing songs on Pacific Avenue or writing with erasable chalk on the sidewalk in political slogans, which is what some people have been convicted of here in Santa Cruz, and standing in front of a sign at the Metro, which I was convicted of, because I essentially told the security guard I wasn't intending to leave. I regarded it as public space, and so he made it a point and an issue, and the judicial system decided to back him up. So let's have a brief musical break, and I'll be right back.
You move me.
And that was Matthew Embry and the number Kiss Me Ashes I'm Falling from his album Live on Tape. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're listening to. Freakradio.org, 101.3 FM. The name of the show, Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. The call-in number, 427-3772. Now let's hear some street interviews, which hopefully will lead into some interesting protest material from yesterday, if we get there on time. We'll see if we do. If not, you're just going to have to come back on Sunday and follow it then. Maybe we'll get there. Let's see.
It's right outside the General Assembly on the post office steps, a somewhat windy, sunny day. It's about 2:30, well, 10 to 3, and it's Sunday, the 12th of February, and I'm talking with
Anthony Messer.
And Anthony, you say you got wind of this particular meeting, and you decided to hang in Santa Cruz even though you've been passing through?
That's absolutely right. This is not my final destination, I don't believe, but I do believe that I was led to you guys. Our movement has died, and you're alive. I mean, you need help, so here I am.
And your movement is, where was it?
Oh, Occupy Sacramento. I'm
How there. Long were you with them?
4 months, actually. I just left about 3-4 days ago.
And you say it's died, you mean there's nobody there at all?
Nobody. We have GA twice a week, and it's small. Hopefully with the resurging weather, you know, it's been kind of miserable up there, we'll start getting the numbers that we need to back up there, and things will turn around.
And when did you guys stop camping?
Oh, actually, we were never allowed to camp in our park. The reason being is because every night we had to take our tents down at 11. That's the reason we were going to jail. We would refuse to leave the park even at 11, and so they would take us to jail.
And you yourself went to jail?
3 times, actually.
A crime of?
Being in a park after a certain hour, being in a park during certain hours, and not dispersing from the scene of a riot.
Yeah. Police were rioting against you, were they?
Well, they called us a riot, but all we were doing was sitting on the sidewalk, simply holding a
Very
sign.
Very quiet riot?
Very quiet riot. That's
the name of your new group, Quiet Riot.
Quiet Riot. Let's see if we can do that.
And so when was your last arrest?
Oh, it's been about 3 months ago. They threatened if that was... So, I can't.
Tell me a bit about your jail experiences. How did that go?
What it was, we were just simply placed in handcuffs, put in a paddy wagon, and led downtown overnight, and released early the next morning. And even the court scene was a farce. It was they dropped all the charges against us, but we were told if we got more than 3 arrests, we could be pushing, you know, serious jail time. And
did anybody get more than 3 arrests?
No.
People were intimidated by that.
Yeah, at times, I just didn't want to spread. I didn't want to become too much of a nuisance. I mean, the cops do have a tendency to pick on people they know. So we had to go about it in more stealthier ways, like putting pillows in trees and sitting in trees. And
you did tree sits.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We did there in Sacramento. I myself did not, although we wanted to put boats in trees, but our numbers just slipped and slipped and slipped. And
what was your number at the maximum?
Max, we had 94 arrests in total over 4 months.
But an average General Assembly was how big?
Oh, 30, 40 people.
And
but again, that's 2 days a week, and it's not, I mean, you know.
Were you having them every day for a period of time?
Oh, yeah, for a period of time. We actually had brought out tents and set them up in the park and brought a generator out till 11 o'clock every night, from 5 to 11. Every night.
How long did that go on?
Oh, I want to say a month and a half.
And then the police started threatening to arrest and arrest.
Oh, yeah, and our funding started running weird. And I mean, it became very political at a point. And
what's that? What do you mean by that?
The GAs and how the place was being run. So eventually.
Be more specific. What do you mean?
People wanted to try to create a hierarchy. You know, like they were leaders and that they were the voice and that they were going to do this and they were going to do that. And this is a leaderless, voiceless movement. You know, we are an individual movement. Let's be individualistic and not so headstrong.
Now, were the leaders more likely to be conservative or more radical?
Conservative, definitely. And it I don't know. We did have a couple that tended to be radical, have radical ideas. They got very little support, though. It's sad.
So you yourself were part of the radical faction?
I would like to consider myself that way. I would like to consider myself someone that thinks outside of the box to get someone's attention. You know, I mean, sitting in trees and putting pillows in trees and having pillows arrested, those sort of things are thinking outside of the box to get people's attention. You know, people see that kind of stuff in the paper and on the news. They want to, you know, they want to know more about it.
Get into a pillow fight.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. We actually had three pillows arrested one night.
Oh, really?
We had three confiscated by
Did
the police.
Did they get OR'd or were they, was there bail set?
No, actually, they are still in custody, and we pending release. That's all we knew.
And what are the names of these pillows?
We did not name these particular pillows because they were being occupied by individuals at the time, and they got up to go use the bathroom, and they were gone.
I see. So
they came in riot gear. They riot gear to confiscate pillows. It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
So they pillow napping?
Yeah, pillow napping. That's what we call
pillows napping. So.
Yeah. They caught them napping. Sleeping period is off. Just off. Now we have gone from the park across from City Hall to the City Hall lawn, and it's been a tough go. Been a tough go.
How so?
Weather's been nasty, miserable, cold, and nobody wants to sleep out in that. We have been given permission to sleep on the City Hall lawn, but nobody wants to sleep in that kind of weather, you know, especially when people have houses and all people want to do is bicker and fight, and it just nobody wants.
Tell me about the bickering and the fight. How did that happen?
I guess that happens just over time. I cannot say that I was not a party to it on several occasions myself, and I may have led...
You, a bickerer?
Me? No. No, former Army Sergeant, no. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What about homeless folks in Sacramento? I know there's a, you know, there's Loaves and Fishes up there. There's the SHOC, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee. How did they relate to your protest, and how did the Occupy Sacramento relate to the homeless?
Well, see, that was a big point, is because, you know, when we had food, when we had things out there like that, it would be the homeless that didn't care about Occupy coming to just occupy and not voice their opinion and move with the movement. They didn't want to march. They didn't want to, you know, I mean, those are factions that need to be done. I mean, people got to hear about you. You can't just sit there and think they're going to come around to you. You got to go to them. So, I mean, it's not just about sitting here. It's about being out in the public, in the world, and letting people see you. And the homeless don't really want to do that. They just want to be fed, get warm, and go about their way.
And how did the other occupiers regard this?
We tried our best to, because I'm homeless myself, and we tried our best to facilitate. You know, when we just run out of things, we just run out of things, and then people didn't like that, you know? I mean, it's what we got till we got it, you know? And
why did your family decide to start traveling, and when did that happen?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
When did you start traveling and why?
I started traveling about, 4 days ago, and I left with a current friend, CJ. She is actually from here in Santa Cruz, and I hopped a ride with her, and I think I'm going to leave tomorrow and start hitching the one. I hear Humboldt's getting nice about this time of the year.
Are you traveling to the Occupies or their remains, or are you just traveling?
I was just traveling. I was actually looking for you guys the other night. Didn't find you guys, like, any tents or anything. I heard you guys had tents at one point in time.
Old days, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
December 8th, they destroyed all the tents.
I mean, I would love to stay in Santa Cruz. I love the beach here. I mean, I'm originally from Florida. It's got a little taste of home, and you guys seem like you have a lot of things in the plan, and if I could get on my feet here, I would definitely like to be here.
We've been talking with
Anthony Messer.
Anything else, Anthony?
I'm thinking Santa Cruz is looking like it needs occupying.
Thanks.
And I'm actually looking online. That was, of course, an interview from last Sunday, right after the General Assembly on the post office steps, which is where Occupy meets on Sundays. There's an interesting article here, which I'm trying to find. Let's see here. It's about an action at the Wells Fargo, of all banks, bank which is recorded on Ustream, but the actual story, which is perhaps worth noting, is Occupy Sacramento Disrupts Wells Fargo Foreclosure Event by Dan Botcher. And this is a not sure who he represents. Let's see. Comcast.net. No, I think he's maybe just a private reporter. Occupy Sacramento on Wednesday, February 8th, that's a week ago, more or less, designated a so-called home preservation event by Wells Fargo at the Sacramento Convention Center, calling it a public relations event for the bank and another example of unfair and deceptive practices towards homeowners rather than a real effort to help the 99%. Occupy Sacramento said it will protest again Thursday at 10:30 a.m. at the convention center, and this time will protest with a homeowner who says Wells Fargo is making it impossible for her to modify her loan. Last Thursday, the Occupy Sacramento foreclosure team will meet with the chiefs of staff of the County Board of Supervisors, according to Cress Vellucci of Occupy Sacramento. A news conference at Thursday at 2:30 p.m., probably a week ago, at 700 H Street outside the supervisor chambers will provide details of that meeting, including requests by Occupy for the county to support a statewide moratorium on foreclosures and locally enact a blight ordinance to hold banks accountable for their neglect of vacant properties. The law allows banks to be fined $1,000 per day. An interesting idea that Santa Cruz might want to pick up on. About a dozen Occupy activists infiltrated the Wells Fargo event Wednesday and shouted a mic check and distributed flyers to homeowners inside before police tossed them outside. Mic check is a phrase used by Occupy people to indicate that the next speaker should be echoed by everyone so the people in the back can hear it who aren't normally able to hear, or at least so that the message can be broadcast more loudly. They distributed flyers to homeowners inside before the police tossed them outside. There were no arrests, although 110 people have been arrested at Occupy Sacramento, apparently more than our Anthony interviewee said a few moments ago, since October 6th, according to Cress Vellucci of Occupy Sacramento. In a written statement, Occupy said, "Everyone deserves to have a roof over their head and a place to call home. For all of us, having a decent place to live for ourselves and our families is the most fundamental part of the American dream, a source of security and pride. Now, because of the foreclosure crisis Wall Street banks created with their lies and greed, millions of Americans have lost their homes, and one in four homeowners are currently underwater on their mortgage. In the Sacramento region, one in every 19 homes is in some stage of foreclosure. Nationwide, 4 million families have lost their homes to foreclosure since 2007. The Occupy Wall Street movement and brave homeowners around the country are coming together to say, enough is enough. We, the 99%, are standing up to Wall Street banks and demanding they negotiate with homeowners instead of foreclosing on them. We stand in solidarity with the Occupy Wall Street movement and with community organizations who help the 99% fight for a place to call home." And the mic check inside the convention center went as follows. "Occupy Sacramento has a message for Wells Fargo Bank. Keep the people in their homes. Make the banks reduce their loans. Wells Fargo, you have a responsibility to keep people in their homes. Wells Fargo, you can afford it. After taxpayers bailed you out with $43 billion, you pocketed another $40 billion in profits. Wells Fargo, be responsible. Write down the house's principal to current market values. Reduce monthly payments to affordable levels. Stand by your promises. Make loan modifications permanent. No more foreclosures. No more foreclosures. Keep the people in their homes. Make the banks reduce their loans. Banks got bailed out. We got sold out. The Wall Street bailout and increasing foreclosures of homes by the banksters occurs within the context of the drive by corporations and the foundations they fund to privatize public services, education, water, the oceans, and the public trust. Michelle Rhee's campaign to privatize public education, the Brown and Obama administration's Bay Delta conservation plan to build the peripheral canal to export more Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta water to corporate agribusiness and Southern California, and the privatization of ocean conservation through Arnold Schwarzenegger's corrupt Marine Life Protection Act initiative are just three examples of the many corporate privatization campaigns now being waged by the Wall Street 1% against the 99%. And along those same lines, here is a bit of the actual tape or audio of the mic check, which actually I just read, but might be superfluous, but let's see if we can play it anyway. Assuming my computer can catch up with me, or I should say the studio computer. It seems to be slowly catching up. Here we go. And we're almost there. Almost there. It's buffering. And here we go.
Wells Fargo, you can afford it!
Wells Fargo, you can afford it!
After taxpayers bailed you out!
After taxpayers have bailed you out!
With $43 billion!
$43 billion!
You pocketed another $40 billion in profits!
You pocketed another $40 billion in profits!
Wells Fargo, be responsible!
Wells Fargo, be responsible!
Very
nice.
Hey, Ed, hang on a second. I'm almost ready for you. And we actually have a caller on the phone. Hi, you're still there, caller?
Yes.
All right. Now, that was, Ed, that was Occupy Sacramento a week ago doing a mic check to expose Wells Fargo's home preservation event and demand Wells Fargo actually stop its predatory lending practices and share some of its profits with those whose homes are going under fast or already under. What you got? What's the news with Occupy? I guess you're down there at the. Are you at the General Assembly?
It was a short meeting tonight. It's all over. I'm at home.
Oh, any report from the assembly for folks who didn't go?
Yes, there's a fellow just arrived from Sacramento, unless he's an agent provocateur. He says that he's going to reestablish a 24-hour presence at the courthouse on Water Street, starting tonight.
My God. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Does he wish to... has bail money been prepared?
No. We didn't even talk about that. He seems to be the fearless type. So he's asked for volunteers, and three or four people said, yeah, they'll show up and smoke a joint with him or whatever as he sits out there on a beach chair in front of the courthouse.
Wow. Well, of course, it is getting a little warmer, so I guess, although it seemed a little colder last night, I don't know. I hope he's got some blankets. This isn't Anthony by any chance, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Anthony, we just played your interview on the air here.
No, he's not here.
Oh, well, we actually played...
Robert, I'm here.
Oh, that sounds like the man who was in the studio earlier tonight.
Everywhere, yes.
That is our... my goodness, you get around free, don't you? So
the legal threshold, nor do I lodge.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad to hear it. You chicken shit, you.
That's right.
So Ed, this is what do you make of this? Is it was there much? How many people showed up at the General Assembly, and how much support was there for him there?
Well, there were about 20 people total for the General Assembly, and three or four said they would come and join him and support him.
Will you be bringing the porta potty down, Ed?
Not tonight.
Well, I know that tomorrow you have a court date coming up with another, now a jailed sleeper, Gary Johnson. Any updates on what's going on with that?
Well, tomorrow at 1:30 in Department 2 of the Superior Court, Judge John Gallagher, Gary and I will be presenting his demur to the charges being unlawful lodging And the demurrage is
challenging the law.
Challenging the law. Challenging the constitutionality, especially under the Ninth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which California also has a analogous provision in its constitution, which says that the fact that certain rights are enumerated here in the Constitution does not mean that the people do not retain others, and therefore, in other words, when the congressman, one of the congressmen who was debating the issue of whether to put the Ninth Amendment in the Constitution back in 1790, said, "Well, if we don't put this kind of a provision in the Constitution, then the government could someday decide that they want to regulate our sleeping habits."
Indeed. I guess he was a far-seeing congressman. You know, I know you have run some of these arguments before this same judge before, and in fact, you yourself are serving, or are actually, you serve part of a six-month term for the same charge, because you were convicted of this lodging law, as was Gary Johnson, the person you're defending, in an earlier action. Isn't that correct?
Yes. I'm out on bail, pending appeal. I've served 2 weeks. Gary Johnson served 2 weeks, and then we were released on bail, pending appeal.
And where is that lodging, so to speak, right now?
Well, it's we've just filed our appellate's opening brief 3 or 4 days ago, or a week ago or so, and then now the DA has to file its opposing brief, and then I'll file a reply brief, and then we'll have an oral argument in front of a three-judge panel here in Santa Cruz.
Now, you know, of course, my thoughts on this are that this is a doomed situation as far as the actual court's decision goes, but it may be an opportunity for the community to be aware of the corrupted process that's going on. I did review, in fact, posted some of the legal documents that you prepared for tomorrow, and I guess you'll get me the your appellate pleading at some point, and that can be posted, too, for your own and Gary's appeal of the sentence that you've already been convicted on.
Well, I think if you check, you'll see that I've already provided that to you, and that's probably one of the documents that you have already posted.
Oh, I think you appended that to the demurrer. Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
So the judge allowed me to do that. We had an earlier demurrer hearing in which I submitted only a 4-page personal letter to the judge.
And so Gary is cooling his heels in stir. Is he happy with the things in Watsonville? Does he have any reports about how things are going for Watsonville prisoners down there?
Well, when I last saw him a couple of days ago, he had just then been transferred to the minimum security site. So I don't know how that's going for him.
Huh.
But it's probably pretty relaxed. I mean, the whole scene down there in Watsonville is pretty relaxed.
Are they allowing him to sleep, Ed? Because he has no right to sleep, according to the judge. They could just keep him up forever.
Well,
they tend to overlook that one.
Well, right. I believe Gallagher had it right when he said you can sleep in jail, which is what he, I guess, is doing, right?
That's the time, place, and manner restriction.
Yeah, we'll get to... Want to go to sleep? Go to jail. Yeah, I mean, that's... You know, so I know I like some of your arguments, Ed, little as I think they're going to influence the judge tomorrow at 1:30. How long do you expect this hearing is actually going to last? And is it going to be on time, or will we be waiting for hour after hour in the afternoon?
That is impossible for me to say as to whether or not the judge has other cases besides ours. When we did this back in, April, I think it was, or January of 2011, the first demurrer hearing on the first set of charges, we didn't get to be heard until about 3:30 or 4 o'clock that afternoon. Now, but this time, hopefully there won't be that many cases ahead of us. Maybe there won't be any other cases. There's a good chance that that will be the case. And therefore, we could get heard right at once.
And, of course, since the judges, these are pretty much the same arguments as last time, or are there new arguments?
Well, we'll just expand on the old arguments pretty much. I mean,
I'm not saying the arguments aren't valid. It's just that we know this judge has rejected them. I mean, I noticed, you know, you pointed out that the fact that judges have not previously held there's a right to sleep, it doesn't mean it isn't guaranteed by the Constitution. But let me, you know, rather than go over this, which we've gone over a lot, let me just ask you the really $64,000 question. Will you be going to jail to visit Anthony after he gets arrested for trespass tonight?
He's got a court date tonight.
That's something that I don't even know whether he would want me to, but I would consider it if I hear the request.
Fair enough. Did you give him your phone number to call?
No, I didn't think about doing that. But
I can drop by and give it to him if you want, if you think that's something you want done. And this is not to put you on the spot. Well, obviously it does. Darn. I'm sorry.
You can do that if you like. Sure.
You can tell Anthony's going to stay up, it sounds like, on his chair all night. But you can also tell him that he can just move to the sidewalk and then he avoids the trespassing charge as soon as they...
I'll mention that to him, and he can also still continue the vigil on the sidewalk. Yeah. Although he may be blocking the sidewalk.
I know, you can't block the sidewalk.
You can play Mother May I with the deputy sheriff.
I suppose so, yeah. Or should we say, WOAC May I, you know. He's the sheriff. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Ed. Any other thoughts?
No, I'm pretty solid.
I wouldn't say that. Thank you very much, man.
All right.
Bye-bye. That was Ed Fry, who's an attorney, who's activist. I've talked about him earlier in the show. He's a man who I, you know, have differences of opinion with, but you can't fault his courage. You can't fault his persistence, his energy, his commitment. It's all there. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. According to Ed, Anthony is on the steps of the courthouse as I speak. I don't know if that's actually happening, but it may be Anthony Messer, I believe his name is, if it's the same Anthony who I interviewed on Sunday. And more power to him. I'm going to go down and see what kind of comfort I can provide, whether I'm going to stay there and take a citation with him. That's another question. I've got lots of fish to fry myself, so to speak, as I get broiled away. Let's hear some more interviews from the street, and maybe we'll even get to hear some protest stuff, though it's looking like we're time is getting short.
So we're here with Barr, the one and only. And Barr, you have a comment about your most recent experiences on the street.
Yes, I just want to say that the law-abiding officers here, hats off to those.
Are there law-abiding officers here?
If I can finish the statement, sir.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Hats off to those that wear their badge right. And those that particularly are not doing it because of whatever, well, it's not in your training. And please reflect on the training more so than the attitude without gratitude. And that's all Barr really has to say. And you really can't touch this. I fuck with this anymore. Barr, out, Dole, out.
Thank you, Barr.
But
so apparently you ran afoul of Officer Winston, Dreamcatcher. And how did that happen?
Foul.
Foul. It was a foul play. And what, when and where and how? Give me the details.
Well, I was in the chicken coop, and he thought there was two doors to a chicken coop, and I was trying to tell him.
This is very metaphorical, but what actually happened, when, where, and how?
I was roosting, sitting, I'm trying to hatch an egg over there at the smoking section in my hatching square egg.
And where was this?
Over there by the red meter where they took the bench out.
Oh, the in front of Borders?
No, down this way where the smoking area is on the same side as Starbucks.
Okay, and the Officer Winston approached in a vehicle or on foot?
In a vehicle.
And what did he do then?
He told me to move, that I can't sit there. And, got up immediately and started packing. Because I wasn't selling anything. I wasn't spaging. I wasn't doing anything except looking at my paintings.
What time of day?
It was night.
Last night?
Yes, last night.
Uh-huh.
And so I put everything back in my cart, you know, because people like to look at my art. And he comes back. I'm finishing my cup of coffee. I interrupted my cigarette, my cup of coffee, which is what I sit there and do. And I didn't mean to violate. I didn't know I was violating. Well, you know. So I finish my cigarette, my cup of coffee, comes by again, and then I told you to move. Now you're going to get some paperwork. I go, okay, I'm sorry. I was just finishing my cup of coffee and cigarette. I mean, I don't mean to go out of my way to mess with you or to violate, Winston. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know I could sit here. I wasn't staging or anything. I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
His response?
Well, Lee was standing there. So Lee got the bank shot from the reality and got distracted. And I thought he was talking to me the whole time, telling me, you know, this and that. Yes, go ahead. No, I got to fill this second. Hold on. Let me finish this, please. Can I?
Hurry.
Well, anyway, I got my 25th ticket, and Lee was there, and it was interesting, and I just said, I'm sorry, I won't do it again.
I'm going to go in.
And he let me go. Took my information off the other tickets that I got recently. Betting in the park.
When was that for?
That was 3 days ago.
And this was during the day or at night?
Yes, this was during the day. In the morning, they came through because everybody's getting out of hand over there smoking and stuff and being disrespectful to the people that want a non-smoking park. That's difficult. There's drinkers over there. There's smokers over there. There's this over there and that over there. And then
but you weren't given a ticket for smoking or drinking, but for betting.
No, I don't drink, and I walk off property to smoke because...
What time was the ticket given?
This was given early in the morning.
Before 8:30?
Yes.
Violating the blanket ban.
Correct. Betting. Can't be in your stuff. You got to be on your stuff.
I guess. So
it sucks.
You have several citations. We'll talk more. I see you're
25.
Get someone waiting for you, so I'm going to let you roll. But
okay.
Don't let this happen again.
I will, and I can't wait for the next one because it's, you know.
Was the citing officer the same in the park as it was?
No.
A different officer. His name?
I think it was, I don't know, he looks like Fred Flintstone.
Very well. Thank you.
And again, that's one of the, I thought that the ticketing for blankets, covering up with blankets after 11 o'clock before 8:30 a.m. was a thing of the past, but the claim now that you have to be outside your bedding, even in the cold and wet weather, is seems to me to be kind of a sadistic or intentionally kind of harsh approach, a get-out-of-town kind of anti-homeless. But, of course, what I say seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? Moving on.
Talking with
on Lawrence, I'm a Rich.
And Rich, you said Mountain Man, you've been twice accosted by Officer Clark?
No, I've been arrested, taken into custody. I had a warrant for a possession of concentrated cannabis that should have never been a ticket in the first place.
Are you a medical marijuana guy?
Yeah.
You have a $100 recommendation.
It should be said that Officer Clark is probably not Deputy Chief Clark, who I referred to earlier and who may be coming up in the tapes, if not this evening, then on Sunday morning when I come back and do a longer show.
Oh, yeah. I'd let mine expire, which was how he was able to bring me in. But, you know.
Did they confiscate your medicine?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did.
Did they ever return it?
No, they did not return it.
How much was taken?
Just like about an eighth of an ounce. It was all I had.
What condition do you have that the marijuana helps you with?
Oh, anxiety is one of the main ones. I have post-traumatic stress disorder because I've been handcuffed and hogtied by police officers and then beaten. So I get really tense around them.
In Santa Cruz here? Or?
Actually, that was in San Jose. You know,
how long ago?
That was in 1991.
Wow, but it still impacts you.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, it was a drastic negative turning point in my life. I mean, that cost me my job and my place to live, which made my lady say, well, screw this. And, you know, it also cost me my marriage.
What kind of work were you doing?
Apartment manager and maintenance team.
And how long have you been on the streets here in Santa Cruz? Assuming you are on the streets.
I've been around Santa Cruz, this whole society for, since I was a child.
But you were then housed over in San Jose as an apartment manager?
Yeah. Me and my wife, and they, beat me up and then arrested me for it. And then my wife called our boss and told him, hey, we're not going to be able to be there tomorrow morning. At 7 o'clock, it might be a little bit later, but my husband got arrested, and the boss who just hired us said, oh, it's okay, we'll go with the other couple, and so it cost us our job and our place to live. And
Have you been houseless ever since, or have you been back in housing?
I actually was in a house for about 5 years after about a 10-year span after that. That impacted me pretty hard.
So now you say that you've been arrested twice by Officer Clark?
Yeah.
What were the charges? One was the marijuana. What was the other?
I lost the backpack and went down to Taco Bell to, because it was one of the places that I'd stopped the night before to see if I left it there, and also could have been at Cafe Gratitude or, I was looking for my backpack and I stopped in and I said, hey, I might have left the backpack here, the little black one. They said, yeah, we got it. It's in the safe. It'll be right out. And then they called the cops. The cops came and recipe because there was drugs in the backpack, and I ended up having to plead guilty to possession of heroin and possession of methamphetamine on stuff that I was never in possession of. You know, and the backpack that he had wasn't mine, and but they weren't going to let me out to fight it. So I just went ahead and pled guilty to, so I could get back.
The consequence? How long ago was that?
That was last week.
And so now, what kind of a probation or charge, or what do you face?
Well, I've got a 3-year tail of probation, which, you know, I mean, I really have this aversion to the search and seizure thing, and, you know, having men's hands on my body, especially when they're, you know, have been known to beat me up before. You know, I've had them stick me in 4-point restraints and then rape me by sticking a tube in my penis to find out if I did something that I wanted to do anyways. You know, as if they had a choice of what happened on the other side of this skin. You know, because I mean, any authority that they have, they might think they have stops at my skin at the very closest. You know, and I like to have actually a space buffer. I mean, our government is out of control. Our legal system has lost sight of its goal, which its original purpose is to protect us from organizations that would, you know, subjugate us like they are. And our government has become an illegal government, and it's our right, our duty, and our responsibility, and our honor to overthrow these motherfuckers and start it over again. And do something right, because we're not supposed to be here to fight this war over here and over there. You know, I say we bring all our armed forces home and tell everybody else in the whole world, you know, fuck with us, and this is what you got to deal with, and, you know, get back to basics. I mean, and you know, family and community and you know, being a part of something good instead of trying to, you know, have power and control over somebody. You know, I mean, the whole, they railroaded me into this possession of heroin, and I don't do heroin. I did heroin like 20 years ago, and I spent 4 hours trying not to throw up on myself and said, this is not for me, you know. But they think that they've got some, you know, authority over what we do, and that's just not right. It's supposed to be a free world.
We've been talking with
Richard Harrow.
Thank you, Richard. Mountain Man. Should be on free radio
Thursday night. Here's for the information. It's also archived.
Yeah.
No problem, Richard.
So, let's take a brief, another one of those brief musical breaks I love so much, and we'll hear some more street interviews, or possibly your words on the air. 427-3772 is the phone number here. It's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org that you're listening to.
Containment is impossible, travesty in blight. Containment is impossible, we wander through the night. So bleach it in the shoe shops, lance it in the green. Containment is impossible, you are your inner team. Obfuscation is impossible, sleepyhood is white. Strangulation is improbable, we wane without plain sight. So hone it in the sweatshops, forsake it for the sea. Obfuscation is impossible, you must enjoy the shame.
And that was another from Matthew Embry. But street interviews are our major interest. Let's hear some more of them.
I'm here in inside the Red Church Calvary Episcopal long line of food, and it's sort of early in the month. It looks like a lot of people for this early in the month. We're talking with Father Joel Miller.
When it's cold and wet, there's lots of people here.
It's not wet.
It is in the month.
Now, are you having any food problems? I know a couple months ago you were getting food shortages.
Well, we have a tight budget, but we always seem to have an abundance. It's kind of ironic that this part of our budget is funded with even a little surplus now. Other parts of our budget aren't doing it quite so well in the church.
What would they be?
Salaries, electricity.
So you're that vacation to the Bahamas is just going to have to wait?
Yeah, well, we make it, but with some difficulty.
So you also mentioned that a shelter is opening up here?
Yeah, it was a long process, but we've been considering this in conjunction with the Association of Faith Communities, which has 16 active churches who come together once a month to consider how to address the needs of the people that are living on the street, the homeless people. And so Calvary has kind of launched a pilot program to lead the way to have a shelter. And we're starting out small. It's for 10 women and children, and it'll be on Monday nights. And as of now, there are 3 other churches who are going to be doing it.
Same night or different night?
Different nights. So actually, these 10 women and children will have a place to stay every night of the week.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I first began rather systematic homeless activist work, not as a homeless person, but as a housed person who was interested in civil liberties for homeless people, Calvary Episcopal used to open up its doors every night to people until the authorities threatened to ticket the pastor for doing so. That was in 1988.
Yeah, well, I know David Jones started the shelter. He was my predecessor, and he closed it down, and I didn't know the reason, but presumably that was it.
Well, it was interesting that the story went, and I actually wrote about it at the time. I wasn't here, but the report I got was that people were sleeping outside the church on the grounds. And whenever the police would come, they'd ring the bell and everyone would run into the church and stay inside as a sanctuary.
Right.
And so the police finally decided they pounded on the door of the church and said, if this happens again, we're going to come and we're going to bust everybody inside the church.
Really?
Yes. Which they can do because a church is not a residence or a hotel, and therefore it is not a domicile. In other words, this is not intended for human occupancy. Hence, it violates the sleeping ban provisions of the municipal code, which says thou shalt not sleep after 11 o'clock.
My understanding is that this area is licensed for city permits. This is zoned as a residence area.
It's zoned as a residential, but I don't know if this building is a residence. That's the question. I mean, maybe it is, but I know, for example, the city sometimes looks the other way, obviously. The Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program that ran for 20 years never had a permit.
Right.
And it was, some of it happened inside churches that were not residences,
right,
and therefore were violations of the sleeping ban law.
What I understand from Don Lane is that there's a difference to having a shelter where people live and a place where they just come to sleep. In a place where you have a shelter, you have to have baths and, you know, all the toilet facilities that you would in a residence. But they just come at 8:30 and then they leave at 6:30 in the morning. So it's mostly sleeping. So
if you can get away with it, I say right on.
That's actually a distinction that isn't real in law, but I mean, you know, it's something that Lane... it creates in order to, again, give credence to a very, very token program that is only a fraction of what the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program was 20 years ago. It's depressing to see people working on this issue so fervently that even in concept is so small. I guess Joel Miller, we're talking to, Father Miller, is talking about a program of one night a week for a group of 10 people. And, you know, back in 1988, we went to jail or Yeah, some of us did go to jail for demanding that the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program be expanded to accommodate from, I guess they had 20 or 30. We wanted them to do 40 or 60. We wanted them to have a pickup spot that was out of the rain. We wanted them to be able to be open at late night so people could go to city council meetings. We had numerous demands then, and we've actually lost ground since then. Which, of course, the American people have lost ground. Ordinary wage earners have lost ground. The people who have gained ground have been the billionaires and the multinational corporations and the politicians running these rancid and wretched campaigns, whether Obama warmongers in the center or Republican rabbits on the right. Doesn't make any difference in terms of the fundamental situation. I don't know. I'm going to go check out Anthony from Sacramento and see how he's doing over there at the courthouse. I invite people to come down and take a look. I'll be doing some interviewing. Who knows? I'll be getting arrested. Hopefully not, just because I want to keep an eye on what's going on and be supportive of people whose basic civil rights are under siege here in Santa Cruz. That's true for any homeless person outside most of the time. Let's hear some more from Father Joel Miller on Monday night at the Calvary Episcopal Church.
Although, to me, it's kind of depressing because this is, we're even further back than we were 22 years ago when there were regular nightly facilities with the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program for 40 or 50 people a night. Well, 20 to 30 people a night,
I think more than that. My understanding, there were 35 churches that participated in it. So churches all over the city were doing it every night of the week.
Really? I thought there was like 12 churches or something.
No. You can confirm that with Paul Lee, but
he would know because he was involved in the program.
Yeah, he started it basically. So,
Paul Lee, Paige Smith, Fred Gray, those were the folks who were.
Yeah.
And I say that, interestingly enough, Paul Lee was holding the Penny University next door with guest speaker Daniel Sheehan. There's a Penny University group open to the public. It's sort of a confab of mostly older folks who discuss some local issues and some national issues every Monday night, I guess from 6 to 7:30. I'm not quite sure the exact time. The same time that the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal, has its homeless meal and church service. And Father Joel is usually, he's invariably good enough to let me speak about some issues. I announced the protest that was held on Wednesday at the 74 Monterey, or I should say River Street, in front of Wells Fargo Bank. And I've also talked about the sleeping ban and so forth. And Steve Plaich, a legal defense worker for homeless people, also is available there at that time for those who want to go to the church. But it's one meal a week. Lee is a writer and a philanthropist, and was a homeless activist of a sort back in the late 80s and early 90s. He wrote a book called The Quality of Mercy, in which he mercilessly denounces me, and apparently he's getting back to his old denunciations from what I heard he spoke. And we'll be actually hearing him on Sunday, because Linda LeMaster recorded the Don Lane University class that's held every week now and open to the public at the Tony Hill Room of the Civic Auditorium, right across from the City Hall, in case you want to go there. It's at 7:30 every Wednesday. And I guess the subject yesterday was homelessness and politics. Next week, Steve Plaich is going to be talking on homelessness and legal issues. I'll play a little bit of Don Lane's introduction to that meeting, actually, as soon as I finish Father Joel's comments, which is going to be soon. And then we got the From the Cream to the Dregs coming up with your favorite Uncle Dennis.
Santa Cruz, thou shalt not sleep, but apparently you're making a small dent in that.
Yeah, well, the idea is if we start out small and it works, then we can expand from there. And we had a tough time selling this because there's a lot of fear. And And the one group that people didn't seem to be as fearful of
was women and children.
Yeah. So
at least they'd be ashamed to be that afraid of those folks.
Yeah. Right. And but you know, the need probably is more acute among single men.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Than women and children. But people feel that that's the least likely group that there'll be some kind of altercation or incident or
drunken bums with narcotics habits or wild and crazy.
Yeah, right. Well,
and dirty, and dirty as well.
Yeah, hygiene's an issue.
Oh, you know, and they go to the bathroom everywhere. For some reason, there's no bathrooms open at night in Santa Cruz. But that's just a second part.
Pauli says that homeless people probably use bathrooms about the same amount of time as Episcopalians.
Well, Pauli, you can never trust what he says. He's involved with them homeless people, you know. We've been talking with
Father Joel Miller from Calvary Church.
Any other thoughts, Joel?
No, thank you for coming by. I haven't seen you for a while.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been here, there. I haven't been jailed, but I did have an arrest warrant that came out for me, so I'm going to have to watch my step.
Yeah. Okay, do that.
All right. So I'm talking with...
And we'll hear who I'm talking with next time, but we are coming up against 8 o'clock, so here's a little preview of Don Lane's description of what happened yesterday. Well, this is him talking to the homelessness and politics class, and we'll be hearing more of that on Sunday, 9:30 to 1, with my pungent comments. I should say I'll be talking about Paul Lee, too, and giving you an alternate perspective on him, as which is sort of a mixed bag with Paul Lee, and I think he probably regards it as a mixed bag with me, although I've heard he's, well, you'll be hear him, I think, I'm told, denouncing me roundly in this forum, which I guess makes him join the crowd, so to speak. But, hey, that's it goes with the territory that I cover. Here's a little bit of Don Lane, Mayor Don Lane, talking about the class that you're going to hear a replay of on Sunday.
Several times. Just a couple of introductory comments about what we're doing before we get to our distinguished guests. Just a reminder that this is a class, a part of the UCSC collaboration with Project Homeless Connect. And so it is, we certainly will have time for questions at the end, but it isn't a political forum. It's not a city council meeting, even though we have a mayor and a former mayor here today.
So no point.
So just that, and then I just wanted to remind everyone that this is, I've lost track, I think this is our fifth week? Yes, our fifth session. Fourth public session, that's right. And we're kind of moving through a series of topics. We've looked at the statistics related to and data related to homelessness. We've heard some personal stories. We looked at the news media. We've looked at how services are actually being provided in the community. And tonight, we shift to perhaps our most lively topic of all, which is the politics of homelessness. And we could probably have a whole semester of classes just on this subject, but we don't have that much time, so we're going to do what we can in one evening.
Yes, you can.
And so we have three guests who I will introduce briefly now, and then they will probably say a little bit more about themselves as they begin. And one thing I want to say before I get to that introduction is as soon as I'm done introducing them, I actually have another meeting I have to pop into for about a half an hour, so I'm going to run away, and then I'll be back before we're done. In the meantime, if anything comes up, Monica will be moderating. But I've asked our three guests tonight to be here because they all have an incredibly rich history of being involved in homeless issues in the city of Santa Cruz for quite a long time. And they haven't just been involved in the politics of homelessness, but certainly that's woven into so much of their work in this respect. So very quickly, what I've asked each of them to talk about is to say a little bit about their own history of being involved in some of the political issues related to homelessness.
Don has a little trouble getting to the point, but you'll be hearing more on Sunday when I come back. That'll be at 9:30 in the morning.
Wait, Robert, your show's over.
Not at all. And I hope that you actually have some music to play, Uncle Dennis. I know that you're going to be violating copyright laws.
Watch out! Me and some drugs will come to town.